Representative Bowman.
I showed him where
it
is. Where is there, right?
Yes, and then Representative Starks.
Welcome to our committee. How are you?
Never had the opportunity.
I know.
It's a great committee. What committees are you on?
Rules, education, and Measure 91.
You got a first term. Well, it's not first term.
I'm going to call the House Committee on Health Care to order for this June 8th. The lovely June 8th weather. Too bad we're inside today instead of sitting by the pool up on the fifth floor. I was thinking that.
That's right.
I hear the water temperature is perfect up there. Today we begin a study of our CCO movement in this state. It's a very important movement. We're leading the country, we think, in the transformation of the healthcare system. But in order to transform the healthcare system, we really need to be prepared to transform the healthcare system. And that's not an easy task. We see the CCOs as a hypothesis that we can change the production function for the delivery of healthcare services. And we're going to take this opportunity over the next several meetings to get reports from the CCOs in almost alphabetical order to see how things are going. For the committee, you've got longer reports from the two that are going to be reporting today in your packet. You also have right under the agenda the list of questions that we've asked the participants to share with us. And we have a little more time today than we'll have when there are four CCOs reporting, but we're going to try and stick to the schedule as close as we can to test and see if it's possible to do, because we will have four CCOs reporting Wednesday, next Monday, a week from Wednesday, and then two more on the following Friday. So if I can invite, who's first, Madam Administrator?
Mr. Chair, we have scheduled in alphabetical order, the first one being All Care Health Plan. And it's Doug Flo, who is the CEO.
Mr. Flo, will you join us, please?
Through my presentation, by the way, I will reference the slides that I trust you all received. Good afternoon. I'm Doug Flo, Chief Executive Officer of All Care CCO. Thank you for inviting me to discuss healthcare transformation in Southern Oregon. It has been 33 months since we started All Care CCO, and we have already lowered per capita costs, improved quality, and achieved higher patient satisfaction among our OHP enrollees. Today, All Care serves 51,900 OHP enrollees in Jackson, Josephine, and Curry counties, plus two zip codes in Southern Douglas County. This is 42% of the local OHP enrollment base. All Care CCO works with numerous organizations to address all aspects of member needs. Included in your information, you will find five letters of recommendation from some of our community partners. The remaining 58% of the OHP population is served by three other CCOs. We collaborate with a different CCO in each county we serve. We believe that competition is beneficial, that offers choice to the OHP enrollee, which creates a sense of self-empowerment and a proactive attitude towards responsible health behaviors. Regarding All Care's CCO structure, we contract with more than 1,200 local providers across our three counties. This represents about 95% of available resources. In that network, we have a significant number of small independent practices, and we rely heavily on those providers to meet the health care needs of our OHP enrollees. All Care CCO works closely with its providers to address integration and care coordination across care settings. This results in a higher level of community-based care, greater patient satisfaction, and a sustainable funding stream for independent providers. This is a critical factor. Provider retention is a critical factor, and recruitment is an ongoing issue for us in our region. All Care CCO is governed by a board of directors comprised of stakeholders who represent physical health, mental health, addictions, dental health, and public health. There are 21 members on the board of directors, and they meet every other month to oversee all facets of the CCO, including clinical and financial integration, quality, network adequacy, and alternative provider compensation models. AllCare has a separate community advisory council, or CAC, in each county, whose major focus is development and implementation of their community health improvement plan. The CACs meet 6 times per year, and each CAC has dedicated representation on the CCO's board of directors. AllCare also has a clinical advisory panel that meets quarterly to review and recommend evidence-based clinical guidelines and best practices to be used by our network of contracted providers. The focus is to strengthen better population health, better patient experience and outcomes, and lower the cost of care through reduction of duplication of services, use of lower-cost care settings, and the elimination of services that are not proven to be clinically effective. AllCare CCO also supports a County Commissioner's Council to ensure a voice of county government in a coordinated healthcare system. This council is responsible for monitoring behavioral health and public health integration, and the braiding of CCO funding with other mental health, public health, and addiction recovery programs to ensure greater access to care and a higher quality outcome for those most in need. Our key partners include the county commissioners, local community mental health centers, addiction recovery programs, public health departments, FQHCs, local hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and long-term care. And our providers include primary care, specialty care, and dental care. AllCare CCO supports the patient-centered primary care home or medical home model of care. More than 70% of our PCPs are currently recognized by the state as a medical home, and they receive an added PMPM fee from AllCare for their care coordination efforts. However, many of our smaller clinics do not have the resources to invest. In response, AllCare has established a centralized staff to support our smaller offices to ensure that all OHP enrollees have access to the full range of medical home services. AllCare is part of a larger family of businesses that include the following companies: AllCare Health Plan, AllCare Management Services, AllCare eHealth Services, and Midrog IPA. AllCare is a separate company within the AllCare family of companies. Under the OHA contract, AllCare is paid a per-member per-month rate by the state. It is up to AllCare to deliver OHP services within the parameters of that capitation rate in that contract. To date, profits have been retained for future reserves or distributed among our risk-bearing providers as shared savings and or invested in transition to a population health management system. AllCare CCO and assembly of other businesses are for-profit entities. In 2014, the company paid $13.5 million in federal, state, and local taxes. At the same time, AllCare is a reliable community partner. For example, this year, it gave our 3 community advisory councils $500,000 to implement their community health improvement plans and related activities. They are totally in charge of that money. We support 4 FTEs in Josephine County Public Health Department to ensure services that are used by OHP enrollees and the broader community are not lost due to the current budget constraints. We provide significant financial support to numerous community programs throughout the region, including Women's Crisis Centers, the Gospel Rescue Mission's Identity Recovery Program, local food banks, Boys and Girls Clubs, a homeless housing initiative in Jackson County, and many, many more. Regarding fundamental change, as previously noted, AllCare has already seen a reduction in per capita cost, improved quality, and a better patient experience. Our per capita costs have declined since 2012 when the CCO was launched. Quality has improved every year, as demonstrated by the state quality measures. Our internal primary care patient satisfaction survey currently shows that 86% of our patients report being satisfied or extremely satisfied with their access to care and the quality of care their PCP is delivering. In addition, there are 4 areas where AllCare is leading fundamental change in Southern Oregon: alternative payment models, hub and education support, non-emergent medical transportation, and flexible services. alternative payment models. Early on, AllCare CCO identified the need to shift to a value-based payment methodology. While global budgeting allowed CCOs to start the process of integration, traditional payment methodologies worked against time. We wanted more rapid and sustainable change. AllCare embarked on a journey to improve the triple aim through development and implementation of alternative payment methodologies, or APM. This effort began in October 2013 through our OHA transformation grant. Over an 18-month period, AllCare established four work programs, or groups, pardon me, to develop APMs: primary care, specialty care, mental health, and dental health. Each work group developed their own APM that addressed key areas where AllCare wanted to see change. This included utilization management, higher quality, better access, expanded participation in provider CCO leadership, improved patient satisfaction, strengthened patient-centeredness through medical homes, integration across care settings and provider types through better care coordination. Our first payments will be distributed this July to our primary care providers and pediatricians. The other three APMs, our specialist, behavioral health, and dental health providers, will launch their APM initiative July 1 of this year, with their first payout possible next June. Our training staff provides in-clinic training on new payment models, including proper coding and documentation to ensure providers maintain the data needed to meet the metrics. Once those models are in place, AllCare plans to tackle new payment models for hospitals and other inpatient facilities. Regarding hubs and education, we have hired a full-time master's level educator to integrate our CCO activities with other agencies that impact the health of our children in areas such as schools, housing, and public health. Also, we recently authorized two community health workers to be embedded in early Head Start and Head Start programs in Jackson and Josephine counties. Non-emergent transportation. One of the most frequent complaints we heard from our behavioral health and oral health partners at the onset of the CCO was the number of no-shows they experienced each day. In response, AllCare CCO decided to facilitate a dedicated and independent non-emergent medical transportation program. The program is funded on a PMPM basis with a capitation withhold. The withhold is paid back if certain quality and utilization benchmarks are met. Benchmarks include member and provider satisfaction and punctuality. The vendor contractor is totally at risk for performance on those indicators. To date, over 11,000 transports are provided each month across our three-county service area. The no-show rate has dropped considerably, thereby ensuring greater access to care for our OHP enrollees. Recent satisfaction surveys have been very positive. Regarding flexible services, they have provided AllCare the opportunity to identify and remove barriers that directly impact an individual's ability to attain optimum health. Some examples of where AllCare has used flexible services include paying a past due electric bill so a member and her family could obtain housing, purchasing blankets for a mother and daughter living in a travel trailer, and purchasing two cords of split firewood for a member recovering from abdominal surgery with no alternative heating source in a rural setting. Integration. In addition to our alternative payment models that are designed to promote integration, AllCare supports integration in many ways, including the following examples. Embedded personnel. We deploy a certified doula within a women's health center who is responsible for assessing all expectant mothers for high-risk behaviors with an emphasis on patients with addictions. The goal is to achieve early identification of abuse issues, enter the patient into treatment as early as possible to avoid complications for the newborn, and improve the mother's overall health. AllCare funded critical public health and mental health positions in Curry County during their recent transition to the nonprofit Curry Community Health. We also support primary care practitioners based within our community mental health program in Josephine County to meet the medical needs of patients with severe and persistent mental health illness. Pardon me. We know that these patients often die 25 years sooner than those without SPMI due to complications for untreated chronic conditions such as diabetes and heart disease. It is our goal to treat such patients with an integrated program that meets all their needs seamlessly. We deploy a primary care women's health provider in the Josephine Public Health Department, along with an RN WIC coordinator and a registered dietitian to maintain critical public services in that area. We have care coordinators embedded in our federally qualified health centers to ensure patients' care is seamless between primary care and behavioral providers. We have incented our PCPs to screen patients annually using ESPRT, screening, brief intervention, and referral for treatment, for early identification, intervention, and follow-up for alcohol and drug abuse. We have incented our behavioral health providers to improve access for PCP referrals to mental health and addictions recovery programs to increase the warm handoff. Often, our addiction recovery staff responds to PCP referrals while the patient is still in the PCP's office, and that's a real plus. We are working with our dental health providers to develop referral networks for patients with periodontal disease, which is often a precursor to diabetes and heart disease. At the same time, we want to improve dental referrals among our PCPs for patients with diabetes and heart disease that are at risk of contracting periodontal disease. Telehealth. In Curry County, primary care providers and Curry Community Health are using telehealth to provide better access to behavioral health services. Curry is a manpower shortage area, and access to behavioral health services has been lacking for many years. We've also partnered more recently with Providence Hospital in Jackson County, launching Health Express, which is a virtual urgent care service. Regarding integrated care coordination teams, we've integrated our care management and care coordination teams to include behavioral health support for both internal CCO staff as well as our community-based programs and agencies. The CCO structure has made care coordination far more effective. For example, recently an all-care coordinator worked with an A&D counselor to obtain a motel room for a homeless 28-year-old man being discharged from the hospital until a residential bed became available. This collaboration could not have been possible without flexible services and likely prevented future costly inpatient stays for that person. We employ about 50 care coordinators, coordination staff that support our primary care providers.
Did you say 50?
Pardon me?
50.
50. Yes, sir. We employ about 50 care coordination staff that supports our primary care providers, whether they are recognized by the state as a medical home or not, to ensure that every OHP enrollee has access to care coordination and integrated treatment planning, no matter whom their PCP is. You asked about quality measures. AllCare has, I would like to say, has succeeded in meeting or exceeding a number of the 17 CCO quality measures, including a continued decrease in emergency room utilization and an improvement in the ESPRT. AllCare has also increased the number of medical homes from 10% at the CCO startup to the current 70% over the three-county service area. However, like many CCOs, AllCare has experienced trouble with the following three measures: adolescent well-child checkups, depression screening, and seven-day follow-up to mental health discharges. AllCare has been aware of these issues since 2013, and we recognize the difficulty in finding solutions to improve these measures. Currently, we are tracking and monitoring every patient to determine who may be at risk for each of these measures, and we are working with our community partners and contracted providers for early identification, intervention, and follow-up. That concludes my presentation, Chair.
That's great. You did very well. Thank you very much for the appointment. Do we have some time for questions?
Just a comment.
Go for it.
Really impressive.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
The flexible services, the alternative payment. I'm assuming that the alternative payment is helping support the flexible services. So it is very heartening to hear.
It's very, very rewarding for me, obviously. I have a wonderful staff. We have a wonderful group of community providers that have come together for the board itself. And from the very beginning, in our first meeting that we had back in early 2012, I stood in front of the group for the first time, and we agreed that the biggest issue, the initial issue to deal with, was trust.
Yeah.
We had to learn how to trust and communicate and believe in those communications with each other. And I think we have come a long, long ways in doing that. And that's, I think, is the underlying element that really has helped us occur.
So could I do, on top of the comment, two just brief questions. I think you touched on them, but if you could say something more about your collaboration with the county and then the early learning hubs for the early childhood piece. And the county in particular, I know that they're in the one of the original recommendations from the governor was to cut out $4 million from the tobacco prevention funds, the TPEP funds.
From the
TPEP funds.
And part of that was we needed money to fund, to fill the gap, to fund the CCOs, our OHP budget. And the concern is that the tobacco prevention that's done by the county has a long history. We don't want to lose that. And also it serves people beyond the OHP population. So some of the conversation here in the building has been, how can we ensure that if that happens, CCOs really partner very closely with the counties on that particular issue, as well as on other issues. So if you could say anything about your collaboration, in particular with the counties.
It really is a collaboration. We are funding jointly together. We actually have hired some of the positions, and they are our employees placed under county supervision. But they are cost-sharing with us to the best of their ability, so we're not picking up 100% of the cost. Mm-hmm. I think the commissioners in that county in particular are very pleased with that. It's going well. We just started our nurse. We have a women's health nurse specialist who is there, and she just started seeing patients on the first day of April. And so far, it seems to be going fine. I hope I'm answering your question.
I'd like to ask. I have two different questions. Let me ask the easy one first, and then we get to the hard one. The easy one is, how are you doing on the integration of mental health services with physical health?
How are we doing? I'm sorry.
How are you doing with the integration of mental health services with physical health?
We know it's going better than I would have expected at this point in time. We're doing, it's the best I can tell you is that at the beginning of each of our board meetings, our board chairman, who is a family physician, will often tell anecdotes about what happened between meetings. And he shared recently a complicated patient who had a very severe dental problem and also has some very severe mental health issues, and how he could not have handled that previously. And he was able to get that person within a day into a dental care with the help of our behavioral health partners, I might add. I think communications are improving all the time. They obviously share risk with us. It's one of the letters in your packet is from one of our directors of mental health, Carla Cafferty. And I know Carla has commented to me several times. She's surprised how far we've come so quickly in terms of breaking down the old barriers that used to be there. We have a lot more war handoffs occurring. Our providers, our nurse practitioners, and physicians are finding it much easier to make contact and get patients who need care seen quickly.
Are there integrated services? I mean, you have mental health services in your primary care clinics?
We have some of that. We also have a physical health provider placed in the Josephine County Mental Health Department and also in Curry County. And that is really helpful for the really chronically ill. That's working out very well.
Anybody want to follow up on the mental health side?
No.
I have
a question. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Chair Greenlake. Mr. Flo, could you just tell me your personal background, your personal professional background?
I have a PhD in what is now public health from Oregon State University. I've taught college. I began my career in public health a long time ago in the 70s in Yuba City, California. And I have worked in community mental health. I've taught university at San Francisco State University for several years. And I have been in my current position, I've been there for 18 years.
Wow. Been around a while.
Mm-hmm. I have.
Do you want to follow that up?
What do you do immediately before this? Hmm. What do you do immediately before this position?
I worked with Group Health Northwest out of Seattle. I was up in Washington State in Eastern Washington. I ran their Eastern Washington operation, if you will.
Okay. Senator, you have a comment, a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for allowing me to sit in on these.
We're honored to bring your presence.
I love school-based health centers. I feel they meet a need for those, school-age children. And I'm wondering if your CCO has done anything with the school-based health centers.
We are sponsoring. We're hoping to sponsor one actually in Cave Junction. We'll be doing more. My medical director has become a firm believer that that's a good spot for pediatrics to occur. We'll be looking more at that. But yes, we have started.
Thank you.
If you want to get that adolescent screening, that's going to be a place, I think. Yes, Representative Lively.
Mr. Chair, so I have a couple of questions. One, and I know this has been a goal with all the CCOs, that we diminish emergency room visits, and that seems to be something you're successful with, but I'd like to understand the availability then of the primary care. So you must be in an area where once these new enrollees came on, there was plenty of primary care to see, or how did you address that if there were not?
We have, you know, there was a challenge with the sudden jump in enrollment, obviously. So everybody was placed in a reasonable amount of time. We do not have an access issue for primary care. We have a place, and our enrollees have choice, which I like, between small offices, group offices, hospital-based offices. We contract with all of them. So access is working right now.
Mr. Chair, can I ask?
Go for it.
I want to pursue a little bit this alternative payment models. And so I know we've talked and others about alternative payment models. So I'm curious from a standpoint, you had these different work groups. And so the measurement, I guess, is what I'm interested in understanding. So there's a holdback that if they reach certain outcomes, then they would be paid this? Or how exactly would you explain
there was a pool. There was two or three things. They're paid based on and one of your slides details that for you. It's based on utilization. It's based on access, utilization, and various quality measurements that were developed by the groups themselves. They spend a lot of time on that. And they're ultimately our first wave were capitated, and their cap was based on that was risk adjusted. And we may try a fee for service model of that in the future in other areas. But there's an incentive pool for them at the end of the year. And they'll share in that incentive pool based on how well they performed. And that's all overseen by the providers themselves. It's a very interesting process.
But the rate they're paid at while they're participating, I'm just trying to understand what that, so is that lower than what the normal capitated rate, or is that is the capitated
they're paid,
rate?
They're paid, we pay a standard, it's a standard rate with an opportunity to gain additional funding at the end of the year if they can meet some of the value-based propositions in that arrangement.
Can I ask one more?
Sure.
So help me understand, though. So where does that money come from? So we've got what you're paid per patient and capitated what we're paying the doctors, but then we've got this additional funds that we're going to provide an incentive to if they meet certain standards.
It comes out of the same provider pool from the beginning of the year. It's a set aside.
Yeah.
And the board approves it. The board sees that at the beginning and understands what that is and approves that.
Up front. Okay.
I was curious about, you said that you've cut the per capita cost in half. What impact is that going to have on your future premium rate? I mean, on your reimbursement rates?
We were funded very, very adequately last year. And this year it appears to be a little tighter, but we're still funded adequately. The unknowns for us, honestly, are around the ACA population as it matures in. Right now, I think it's artificially low.
The Medicaid expansion population.
The expansion population.
Mm-hmm.
I think that their current medical loss ratio is artificially low just because they came out so quickly. And they're learning how. Many of them are learning how to use the system. We want them to use the system appropriately. That will go up. Unknowns for us down the road are there's a lot of large ticket items out there, which I'm sure you've heard about. Sovaldi for hepatitis C is a huge issue for us. We have 8 people right now.
There's some bigger ones behind that one.
I'm sorry?
There's some bigger ones coming behind Sovaldi.
That's correct. You're correct. You're correct. There are some larger ones coming in. We have, you know, it's $100,000 roughly a treatment per member. And we have 8 going right now, and we expect more to be coming in the system. Other things that we're already facing, gender reassignment, we have two requests. That's first for us. What's the word, Cynthia? Help me there.
Eating disorder.
Eating disorder, thank you. The eating disorder, which is a new treatment that we have not looked at before, and the new methodology for treating autism, which is out there right now, are all, they're all unknown for us, and we're watching it very carefully. They will, they'll be challenged.
Well, how did that 50% reduction in capitation in cost come about? I mean, was it a part of the expansion population that didn't use services, or is it?
The reduction?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very interested in your notion that you cut the capitation, the medical expense rate in half. That was it. Am I misreading that? I thought your testimony said that you managed to reduce the per capita cost by 50%.
Oh, no.
That was early in your testimony. Did I misunderstand that?
I'm sorry. We've reduced emergency room visits, and I don't recall it saying reduced overall expenses of 50%. I apologize, I'm not finding it.
It says it's declined.
What does it say?
No, he did not say. Hmm? He didn't say.
Just says it.
Just
here,
said
it just says it declined.
They've declined. They have declined. I wish we could say we reduced it 50%. We haven't. They've declined on a PMPM basis, and there's a chart in your packet that shows that.
50%?
Not 50%.
No, I didn't. I misunderstood that.
Yeah, okay. No. It was my mumbling. No.
I thought maybe you had the secret to everything.
That's right.
One thing about the chart that shows the trends on the one slide, the ACA startup, the ACA in 2014 skews those things a little bit because it artificially lowers the MLR for one, and it reduces the overall visits because we have a large group of people that just came to the system. So it will be interesting to bring that back to you a couple years from now.
Wow, I thought we had solved the whole problem. We just had to do whatever it was you were doing.
Mr. Sherman.
Very disappointing.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes, please.
So I want to...
We've got a little extra time today. We're just at 30 minutes right now, okay. Actually. So it's.
I'm trying to understand better the utilization management, and I assume when we talk about that, these 50 care coordinator staff are part of how you're addressing utilization, or what other things are you doing to address that?
Care coordination staff include licensed and non-licensed personnel. We have community health workers that are doing a marvelous job for us. It's communications. It's that maintaining that communication between the patient's PCP, the mental health provider, the dental health provider. We are on the phone. They're on the phone all the time. We maintain very good records. They maintain good in our documentation system. I had a call recently from one of our doctors called concerning worried about a foster child and placement of that foster child. I was very impressed when I went to the records to see what happened, to see how everything had been tracked day by day, and I was able to answer that question. And they give me a lot of confidence in what they're doing. They really watch closely. I was talking with one of them yesterday that a lady in the hospice was lying on one side and could not turn. And my community health worker, who is probably about 8 years out of high school, was with her and went out and brought a mirror back and put the mirror on the wall so she could look in the mirror and see the TV set. And I thought, wow. It's just a small example. It was big to that person.
Sure.
That was a small example. There's a lot more hands-on treating the whole person. And that's been a big learning experience for our physicians, by the way. It's interesting because our physicians really are clamoring now to be on that board.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They got kind of tired of the other stuff. They find this exciting. They want to do it. It's a very interesting process.
I guess one last question. Go ahead.
Well, I'll leave the last one to you then, but thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you track what your per member per month cost is for different age categories?
We do.
So I'm wondering if you could send me what it costs for children 0 to 1, 2 to 5, and 6 to 18.
I'd be glad
those three
to.
Categories. Thank you so much. 0 to 1. And then the 2 to 5 year olds and the 6 to 18. I've got the projected cost from Oregon Health Authority, and I'm curious how they're comparing to what the estimated cost was going
to
be.
We will. We'll be glad to share that with you.
Thank you so much.
I was interested in how the work of your community advisory committee is going. Mm. Those meetings in public, I assume.
Our meetings?
Our community advisory
The CAC meetings have both. Actually, they have a certain number of public meetings a year, and then they also meet and have work groups. I've been very impressed with our CACs. They take their job very seriously, and it's good.
Who's on this? All public now, I take it.
Who's on the?
Yeah.
On the CACs themselves?
Yes.
There are a variety of people. You have current enrollees. You have former OHP enrollees. You have parents, foster parents, members at large, community at large, public health people. Just a variety. It just depends. Each community I've discovered has its own personality, and so we allow them to just kind of, if you will.
Oh, that's it. You have different advisory committees in each of the counties.
We have one in each county. And we thought about that from the beginning. We could not see how we could create one.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
It does not make sense, because Curry and Medford do not see life the same way at all. And Josie's in between. So, no, it's been interesting to watch. So.
Each
of the CACs has a representative on the board of directors, then too, automatically. So,
thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much for making the trek up.
You're welcome. Thank
you. It's a long drive.
Okay.
Madam Minister, we invite the next team.
Next up is Columbia Pacific Coordinated Care Organization and Mimi Haley.
A team of one.
Thank you so much for coming. Please introduce yourself.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Greenlick, members of the committee, and guests for having Columbia Pacific come this afternoon to talk about us. I think at the end of half an hour, I hope you agree it's the best little CCO in the state of Oregon. I'm going to convince you of that. My name is Mimi Haley. I'm the executive director of Columbia Pacific CCO. It's a CCO that has three full counties in the northwest corner. That's Columbia County, Clatsop County, and Tillamook County. We currently serve approximately 28,000 members, probably 26,000, with the next wave of eligibility disenrollments happening. I do, though, want to share a story with you before I go into the tale of three counties, I like to call it, and just give you a little bit of a context setting here for the conversation that we're going to have over the next half hour or so. Early in the morning of April 23rd, a mother of six from Astoria completed her suicide plan by jumping out the Astoria Bridge. And I'm telling you this because we don't have any crisis services in Columbia Pacific CCO. The services that we are focused on providing are being provided through private resources and through the CCO itself. And so I'm very grateful, and I want to honor Deputy Saxton for starting her tenure in her job with a behavioral health map of the state of Oregon, because that will show the disparities that exist in the availability of basic services across the state. And I think it will help also set the context that not all CCOs started from the same place. And when you hear the story of Columbia Pacific CCO, you will hear that we are starting what I believe to be at a deficit in certain areas. And I welcome the questions that you ask, because we are one of the first CCOs up. Our detailed report may not have been as detailed as you would have liked, so I do definitely want to save time for your questions. So Columbia Pacific CCO is a startup CCO. It was formed out of a partnership between Care Oregon and Greater Oregon Behavioral Health, or GOBE, both organizations having strong participation over the years in Medicaid and deep knowledge about serving the OHP population. It is, however, a wholly owned subsidiary of Care Oregon, and later when we talk about profitability, you'll understand why I think that's very important. These communities of Columbia Pacific CCO are what I would call bootstrap communities. They're used to doing for themselves because they are isolated. 2 hours from Portland, believe it or not, is a world away. And we don't have a lot of resources in Columbia Pacific. And one of the things that we're working on is getting more resources to that area. We do, however, and have since the very beginning of the CCO, had very, very strong engagement by the board, represented by various people in the communities, representing community action teams, as well as public health, the behavioral health communities, the medical communities, as well as consumers. And we've had a very strong clinical advisory panel, a single clinical advisory panel that has been multidisciplinary since the very beginning also, with physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners, pharmacists, dentists, and representatives from the behavioral as well as the medical. We recently added the managing director of our ride broker so that we could understand also the implications of service delivery from the transit and the lack of transportation point of view. And we have three, as you heard from AllCare, we have three community advisory councils, one for each county. They have also been deeply engaged in the work of the CCO. We schedule joint meetings of the board and the community advisory council at least two times a year. Recently completed a joint meeting of our clinical advisory panel, our board, and our community advisory councils to complete our CCO's strategic plan.
Is that a public meeting?
Pardon me?
Was that a public meeting?
No, it was not a public meeting. It was a planning meeting for the strategic planning process. However, to pre-answer your question, our community advisory council meetings are public meetings. Anybody is welcome to attend, although not everybody can participate in the conversation. And each of those community advisory councils has a different makeup, reflecting the interests of the community in terms of participation.
Can I ask just a quick follow-up question?
I'm sorry I interrupted. Let's let her go first.
Okay.
So hold the question.
I should not have interrupted you.
It's okay.
And I apologize.
So we have had, and you'll see in the report, we've had a very interesting stair-step growth pattern, which has affected sort of the priorities that we've adopted in Columbia Pacific CCO. We started with a little over 7,000 members in September of 2012, and 2 months later, we got a rollover of a tremendous number of formerly open card patients who were not used to being in managed Medicaid. So we grew to almost 14,000 members by the end of 2012. And then between January and the end of 2014, we had another huge growth in membership. We grew 80%. And that stair-step process is what I would call the pig and the python, because as that pig moves through the python, it kind of gums up the works inside the snake. And trying to smooth that out over time is something that has been really important to us, because despite that growth, we have not had a single additional provider join the CCO network or move to the CCO service area. So let's talk a little bit about the network and the characteristics of the network. We have eight major primary care clinics in the CCO. Five of those are system-based, Legacy, Adventist, Providence Systems, and three of them are FQHCs. And I would say we have a little bit of trouble in the wind. The FQHCs are all lacking medical directors. One has lacked a medical director for over a year and a half. It's very difficult to recruit skilled physician leaders in these rural communities. And we have had attrition recently that has resulted in only two physicians within the entire CCO service area within the FQHC network. We have nurse practitioners, obviously we have mid-levels, but the ability to recruit and retain talent in those communities is difficult at best. And so retention is one of the things, recruitment and retention is one of those things that I'd like to talk with you about, how we spread the wealth, if you will, into these rural communities. Through GOBI, we have three behavioral health clinics that participate in the CCO, one in each county, and they provide all of the behavioral health services, or the majority of the behavioral health services in those counties. Long ago, we decided to carve it back into behavioral health. So GOBI provides both addictions and mental health services on behalf of the CCO. And we have a single integrated payment that goes to them on a per capita basis to provide those services. However, for specialty chemical dependency services, residents of the CCO and of the counties, for that matter, have to travel to Portland. And that does create access issues and service provision problems as well. And in addition, we have a shortage of dental practitioners. And even though we have an active dentist on our clinical advisory panel, we only have one dental clinic in each county accepting new patients right now. So in certain counties, in Tillamook County, we're at 103% of capacity for dental access. And that is a problem. We're actively working with the dental carriers to try and address that issue. They're very interested in partnering with us to figure out how to increase access, but it's an ongoing concern. Another characteristic of the network is that all of our hospitals are critical access hospitals, which means they receive cost-based reimbursement. And in essence, that means that any utilization improvements that we make through the CCO simply results in an additional payment per unit, because they are paid at cost, and they are often the economic engines of these rural communities, and we would not want to do anything that would jeopardize their financial health or their ability to stay in business. But it does create cost of care issues within the CCO that I'd be more than happy to discuss with you. It basically means that about 60 to 65 cents out of every dollar coming into the CCO goes back out for the provision of inpatient and outpatient hospital services. Unlike some CCOs, with that 80% growth through the ACA expansion, we also have seen a surge in demand. We clearly have seen a pent-up demand issue. We are operating at greater than 88% medical loss ratio for our ACA population. They did not hold back from seeking the services that clearly they needed. This is good, and we have to make sure that the rates are keeping up with the costs of providing care to these populations. And as largely uninsured adults, you can imagine a lot of diagnostic services, a lot of procedures, a lot of tests, and a lot of infusion services for people who have gone without for too long. So as I indicated in the report, our profitability has been exceptional in its minuteness, I guess I should say. We made about $50,000 in 2013 and about $800,000 in 2014. Without the state's funds for transformation, I think that we would be in a very bad place in terms of being able to fund the kinds of transformation that we are funding. And that's the point that I wanted to make about the fact that Care Oregon is the sole owner of the Columbia Pacific. They have put 100% of our reserves aside for Columbia Pacific. It would be very difficult for us to invest in transformation, let alone set aside the appropriate reserves necessary to maintain the plan. So what are some of our transformation priorities? Our report did summarize these, but let me go through them at a high level. The first is really to address addictions and mental health issues. We have, and in both our community health improvement plan and in discussions with the providers and members of the community, there was 100% consensus that we have a population of chronic opiate users with severe mental illness, with issues of suicide, and issues of opiate prescribing. We also have I'm not proud of this, we have the highest rate of tobacco use of all of the CCOs in the state. So we have our work cut out for us in terms of substance abuse and addiction services. For this reason, we have focused a lot of our efforts on bringing detox, medical detox. We just opened 6 new beds in Columbia County. We opened a pain clinic in Astoria that sees referrals from all three counties. It's a behaviorally based model. It is not a prescribing clinic. It's been wildly successful, and we'd be happy to share with you some of the outcomes that we've seen, including the patients deciding to taper themselves off of opiates as they feel better about managing their pain. We are focusing in on the provision of crisis services. We are helping to fund a new crisis respite program in Astoria. We can't wait to get those doors open. And we are heavily invested in co-location of behaviorists in primary care. We, in fact, developed a blended funding pool that takes a percent capitation off of GOBI's capitation and a percent off of Care Oregon, who are the risk-bearing entities for behavioral health and medical services, respectively. Blended those funds so that we could actually fund behaviorists in primary care who are supported by GOBI so that they can provide the full range of behavioral health services in the primary care setting. We are also looking at the bidirectional model that AllCare mentioned of placing primary care in behavioral health. We do have issues of scale. You have to have a sufficient number of patients within a clinic setting to make that cost effective. So we are looking at it, and we'll evaluate whether that's something that we can do. So it's important to talk about integration. I know that this is something that's very important to you, Chairman Greenlich, and members of the committee, that integration is not just about co-location. It is also about co-management of patients, and so that's a clinical integration function. If you have a behaviorist but you don't know how to use a behaviorist in primary care, you're not going to get the benefit from that that you think that you are. So the idea of a shared care plan, that brief intervention, and then the ability to provide ongoing therapy and other supports as needed is a very important component. But there's a technical integration component as well that I want to bring to your attention, which is that you start to share the techniques. You start to share techniques for managing trauma. You start to share techniques such as motivational interviewing, and that's at the deepest level of integration, and that's the level that we are working to achieve in Columbia Pacific. So that's our first priority area. The second priority area is improving access to strong and capable primary care. As you heard, we did not grow, and therefore the only way we can make sure we provide some level of access to our members is to create care teams that are integrated, that allow providers to practice at the top of their license, to put in place care extenders, health resilience workers, clinical pharmacists, and driving huge amount of technical assistance into our clinics to help them understand workflow changes, empanelment, how you mine your EMR for population health initiatives, how you organize your outreach activities through panel managers, those kinds of things that are pretty rudimentary. They are pretty fundamental, and they are at the core of transformation. If you don't change the way that care is delivered in the primary care setting, and everything's riding on primary care on this day right now, then you aren't really going to achieve true transformation. So that's the second area. The third area is preventing and treating trauma. We have a problem in this state, in this country, and it's a growing recognition of a problem related to adverse childhood experiences that result in a less lengthy lifespan, that result in health issues, literacy issues that derive from their various early stages in attachment disorders between the parent and the child. We are training clinicians. We are implementing a trauma-informed community in Warrenton Hammond, which is one of the communities in the state with the lowest matriculation from high school rates in the state. And we're doing that through the leadership of a mother, the chair of the school board, and a person who's on our board of directors to bring trauma to trauma training and trauma supports to that entire community. And then the fourth area that we're really focused in on is not very sexy, and it's not what we talk about, but it is important, and it is core to health transformation, and that is simply convening the conversations. And you heard it from AllCare, and I hope you hear it from every single CCO who comes before you, that the opportunity for people to come together to have a conversation about what hasn't worked and what could work, you can't turn the clock back on those conversations. So if CCOs went away tomorrow, those conversations would still exist. Mm. Those relationships would still go on. That trust that you heard AllCare talk about, that getting to know you, it takes a while. But once it happens, it's powerful. The last thing that I'll mention, which is not really a priority for the CCO, but we are a Wellville community. I don't know if you know about the way to Wellville. It's a national competition, 5 communities, 5 metrics, 5 years to improve health the best, and we will improve health the best in Clatsop County. So we are a Wellville community, and that means we're bringing new resources into that community through venture capital and innovation that exists outside of our state. And it's very exciting. We're going to try and figure out how to share that wealth, not only with our CCO, but with the rest of the CCO communities. So in terms of metrics, Columbia Pacific CCO, despite instability in the provider network and lack of providers and huge growth, we have achieved 100% of our metrics in both 2013 and 2014. We're pretty proud of that, and that is because of the engaged clinicians that I talked about before. But it also It speaks to the ability to provide real-time data to clinicians to understand where they are, who they've seen, who they haven't seen, what to do about that, how they support different workflows to bring more people into the clinic, upskilling and training providers, and helping them understand how to use their electronic medical records. So we have beat the improvement targets for each area. That doesn't mean that we don't have a long ways to go. So the three that we are working on that we achieved the worst performance were the adolescent well visits, and you heard about that from All Care. Assessments for kids in foster care, and Columbia County has amongst the highest rates of foster care placement in the state. And then finally, developmental screening, and how can we work better with the communities, with the hubs, to figure out about developmental screening. And that developmental screening piece is also deeply wrapped around trauma as well, and early childhood events. So for all of those metrics, it's not just about providing supports in the clinic. It's also about reaching out into the medical neighborhood to involve public health, to involve parents, to involve DHS staff, and others who can help us reach the improvement, not only the improvement targets, but the benchmarks that we set out for ourselves. So I'm going to stop there. I want to make sure that there's time for you to ask and answer questions. I do go to the speed talking school, so I probably went through some of this pretty quickly, and I would not mind if you wanted me to step back and do any of it again. I will mention just a couple of things for you to think about before we go into your questions. The first is that the challenge of a CCO is tremendous, simply by the funding silos and the billing and documentation rules that we've set up for very good reasons over the years. So overcoming those is not an act of overnight transformation. It really does require a tremendous amount of understanding of workarounds to really start to break those down. That's
stupid rules for a long time.
That's right. And so that's why we did the blended funding pool for behaviorists. We said we just can't deal with that anymore. Let's figure out how we can solve this problem together. Another thing for you to be aware of is that we would very much like the CCO model to extend beyond OHP. Scale is an issue. You can't have a clinical practice doing one thing one way for the Medicaid population and something another way for the rest of their patients. It just doesn't work. They can't run parallel systems. And so the opportunity to bring scale to the work that we're doing, I think, would be very, very, very much appreciated. The last thing that I'll say is that the pace of integration that's been driven by the state, has been driven by CMS, is breathtaking. We barely complete one aspect of integration, and then we have another one that we have to incorporate into the working rules and the way we engage with our communities. So the opportunity to kind of step back and say, what are we really trying to accomplish, and how can we best do that together, I think will only benefit everybody. That's it.
Okay, Guy.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. That was great again, and your breathless pace in articulating it is very symbolic of the kind of change you've gone through, so very appropriate. I'm going to ask a really quick question, which was when you were talking about the community advisory councils, and then I want to ask a broader question after that. You were saying that you have them and they're publicly noticed and they're public meetings. People can go, but people don't always have a chance to participate. And I just wondered, in each of those meetings, is there a period for public comment?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, there is. And the minutes of those meetings are posted on the Columbia Pacific website.
Okay, great.
As are the summaries of our board meetings, so that people can understand what's happening. Even if they aren't public meetings, they understand what we're talking about.
Great. I just wanted to make sure, because I know that's something you worked on hard to put in our in the legislation, so I wanted to make sure that I didn't misunderstand it, so thank you. You talked a lot about connecting to the hubs and making a big priority of trying to reach adolescents, particularly with a trauma-informed response. It's really important. Thank you very much. And I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about how you operationalize that. You talked a lot about the work in the clinics, but in terms of working, you mentioned DHS, the hubs. How do you actually do that? Who is connecting with them? Do you have people from the CCO who are on the early learning hub To follow up on Senator Mona Anderson's questions, how are you connected with the schools, in particular school nurses or school-based health mm-hmm. clinics?
Mm-hmm.
If you could address a little bit of those partnerships and
sure.
how they actually happen.
So let me see if I can address all of them, and if I've forgotten one, then bring yeah. me back. So remember, these communities are small, which means that in virtually every conversation, you're kind of talking to a lot of the same people.
Yeah.
And so it's not that hard to figure out how you need to work with people outside of the CCO proper.
Mm-hmm.
And because Columbia Pacific is a partnership between Greater Oregon Behavioral Health and Care Oregon, we have relationships in these communities. We have relationships with DHS. And if we don't have those relationships, we find out how to create them. We do have on our CCO board two of the three public health administrators. In Columbia County, Public Health runs the Vernonia Health Center and four, soon to be five, school-based health centers. They're the only ones within the Columbia Pacific CCO. And so we are helping them to achieve state PCPCH recognition, for example. And so the way that we make these partnerships happen is simply through relationship. It's
mm-hmm.
It's by having conversations at the board level, at the CAC level, in the CAP, within the DHS offices. One of the very, very important relationships that we have through public health is with WIC.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the WIC representatives in each county know before anybody else knows what parents are going to become foster parents. They know like that. And so, you know, if you want to work on the DHS metric and getting kids timely assessments for behavioral, medical, and oral health issues, start with the WIC person. And those are the kinds of things that we're finding out through the process of building out our community advisory councils and what I'm calling the medical neighborhoods. Now, Columbia Pacific's hub was only, it's the last hub in the state. I mean, they were just signed to receive hubdom status, I think a month ago. So you know, this is all work in process.
Mm-hmm.
Did I answer all of your questions?
That was great.
Okay.
I'll save it for later, then I have one more.
Oh,
well, just following up on that, because you said that one of the problems with some of your matrix is addressing the adolescent health care mm-hmm. population,
yes.
Or the adolescent population. And so I was wondering, with the four, you said there were four school-based health centers
yes.
in your area, and do they have a dental chair in their school? They do not.
No, none of them has a dental
and
chair, but they have behaviorists.
But they do have
yes.
behaviorists.
Mm-hmm.
And are you able to use metrics from that school-based health center, the care that they give, and incorporate that into your assessments for the matrix system that you have to report?
Yes, and we do. We are working with the school-based health centers. With the adolescent well visits, you know, it's hard to get kids in to be seen. And so we've developed incentives for kids. We've developed education programs for parents, as well as relationships with providers to figure out how to bring kids in. So instead of coming in for a school physical or a sports physical, come in and do the full range of preventive services at that time. So trying to instill in the thinking that, you know, it's okay to have an opportunistic visit. You come in for one thing and you provide these services for something else. That's okay. But yes, we are working with the school-based health centers on those metrics that they can help with. They're pretty small programs. Only one of them is going to 12 months a year out of the year, just now. And as I say, we're trying to help them achieve state recognition so that we could actually assign members to them. And so that is part of the challenge, is that they do have to meet certain standards for us to consider them a assignable primary care provider.
Okay. Well, I know that in my district, we finally got one. You'd think being in the metro area, we would be able to, but we have school boards that just don't put this as a priority. But Centennial High School, they are our first school-based health center, and it was the first time that I'd heard that they are actually having, I don't know if they have two dental chairs or one, but that is part of the dental health and the fact that AllCare was stating that they would be putting some interest or funding into school-based health centers. I'm not, because your margin wasn't as big, I think, as AllCare, there's a difference in scale there, but the community, Centennial anyway, they're allowing the community to come and use it after hours. So they're a full clinic.
That's nice. One of the things that we've done with dental, just so you know, we don't have chairs in any of our clinics. They're expensive. I don't know if you're familiar with how expensive it is to build an operatory, but they are hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so one of the things that we're doing is we're working with a very engaged dentist who has been part of our clinical advisory panel, and he has put in place a community outreach program. He's hired an expanded practice hygienist to go into all of the WIC, the Head Starts in the schools, in the two counties that he practices in to try and bring dental to the members where they're at. Basically, I hate to end a sentence with a preposition, but I had to do it. And so that's how we're trying to get at some of that community-based preventive dental. So we are going to be leaning into the dental space because it's a big issue for us. Thank you.
Representative Lively.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I find the scheduling just fascinating, the fact that we had these two comparisons between the one that's so large and has so many, and we've got the other, the rural, which I think is a good comparison. But I have a couple of questions. One has to do with, you talked about the utilization. I use that term. You talked about 88% of the use rate. So I'm trying to understand, what did you expect versus this 88% when you started down this path?
So the part of the ACA expansion that the feds wanted to put in play, because all of the dollars for the expansion are coming from the federal government, is they wanted to say, they proved to us that you're spending 80 cents out of every dollar that we're giving you on medical services. Mm-hmm. And many of the CCOs are having a hard time doing that for a variety of reasons, some of which is that people aren't coming in to get care. We have not had that experience. 88 cents out of every dollar for our ACA population has gone back out through for medical services. So that was my point, and I'm sorry for being confusing.
No, that's all right. And so the other has to do with these care teams. And so, again, we've talked quite a bit about people being able to practice at the height of their license. And that. So I'd like to understand a little bit better about how you put the teams together, because given the rural nature and the smaller number of providers, so how do you put these teams together? Since they're not all located in the same office, I'd like to understand a bit more how you're doing that.
So we don't put the teams together. Okay. We use more of a kind of an asset-based approach, sort of which clinics are most interested in building out their capabilities, and where do we have the biggest problems. So through transformation dollars that we receive from the state, we are funding resilience outreach workers in Columbia County, in each of the clinics in Columbia County, to test a model that's worked very, very well in the metro area in a rural setting. And what we're finding is we're already scaling that model a little bit to say, let's not just focus on high-risk adults, but kids and families. And so what would it look like to have a health resilience program that's focused on kids, bringing kids back into primary care, so that that's not a forgotten element? We are funding pharmacists, clinical pharmacists in Astoria, for example, where we have a very high rate of opiate prescribing. We're rolling out prescribing guidelines, the same ones that they use in Southern Oregon, and really needing to dig into the sort of the clinical pharmacy issues. So we are embedding clinical pharmacists in the care teams, but mostly what we're doing is we're helping them understand what the role of an MA is, what the role of a physician could be, how you would use a panel manager, what you would do with your EMR, how your workflows would change if you wanted to move to telephonic visits as opposed to face-to-face. So most of what we're doing is supporting the clinics with technical assistance and sometimes staffing and resources to help them achieve more of a team-based model.
Great. Thank you.
Is there anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if you could try to explain again for me the part about the hospitals and the critical access thing. Mm-hmm. And I'll read your testimony and try to get it that way. But try again for me.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. So there's two forms of payment, largely, in this state. One is based on using the Medicare payment rate, or a diagnostic-related group, or a DRG, it's called, for a single admission episode. And those tend to drive, the DRG methodology tends to drive what a commercial payer will pay, as well as what a Medicaid payer would pay for a hospitalization. All of the hospitals in the metro area are DRG hospitals. Okay. When you go into a rural area, And you meet the federal designation as a critical access hospital.
And for Medicaid patients, the DRG payment is usually less than the total cost.
That's probably, yeah, probably true. Yeah. Thank you very much.
That's relevant to the next point you're
going to make. So with a critical access hospital, because they're recognized as a critical access player, they are paid their allowable costs. And I can't tell you what exactly is in allowable costs and what's not.
It's
not
better
everything.
Reimbursement.
But basically, they are paid at cost. What it costs them to run a hospital is what they get paid.
Okay.
And so when those hospitals are paid for inpatient and outpatient services that way, and I talked about the pent-up demand for procedures and diagnostic tests and those kinds of things, all of which are provided in a hospital outpatient setting, you're spending a lot of money at cost as opposed to at market for those services. Does that make sense? So I looked at, for example, and I'm not going to say who, but I looked at the cost per discharge for a patient in Columbia Pacific in the same system as a patient in the Portland metropolitan area, and it was 2.5 times more expensive.
To have it down to the coast?
Yes.
Yeah. This is the real cost. They get reimbursed better, so therefore they charge more, basically? Or?
They're charging their costs.
They're charging their costs.
Yep.
And let's say you could cut their utilization in half. There'd still be fixed costs at a hospital. So
correct.
The point you were making is that then the cost per visit or say would end up
correct.
Going up. So you'd end up not really getting the full savings correct. Of the reduced utilization.
Right.
But some share of it.
Can you ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, just a clarification there. You were saying it's 2.5 times the cost in the rural area. Do you mean that it actually costs 2.5 times more, or the cost is the same but the reimbursement is 2.5 times
more? So I'm saying if I look at what I'm paying for an inpatient discharge versus what health share or family care is paying for an inpatient discharge at the same system, mm-hmm. not the same discharge, not the same diagnosis, mm-hmm. it's crude. At best, it's a crude indicator. It's costing 2.5 times more in a cost-based hospital than in a hospital that's paid at market rate.
Representative Bueller?
Thank you, Chair Greenlee. A point that you stressed, and also Mr. Flo, is the lack of trust in the healthcare sector. Why and where did that come from?
You know, I don't know if it's lack of trust in the healthcare sector. I kind of like to joke about it. The people in Columbia Pacific either didn't know one another or did know one another and didn't like one another. And this happens in small communities. So really the process of bringing people together to have a different conversation than you're not paying me enough or how come I can't see so-and-so today, it's a different conversation. It's about what do we want to do to change it? What do we want to do to address the issues of food insecurity, which is, by the way, a very large burnout for primary care physicians. They can't do what they need to do. They can't prescribe food. But maybe now they can. And so those are the kinds of things we've changed the conversation. And because we've changed the conversation, people have started to come into the conversation with much less, like, oh, I'm just here because I have to protect my assets because you're going to go after them. No, it's more like, how do we share this? How do we create a community conversation, including those who are receiving services in that conversation, to say, what could we do differently? That's what I was intending to communicate. And that relationship building, I mean, everything in Oregon happens because of relationship. And that process of building relationship to address problems that have existed in these communities for decades, for generations, is the beauty of what the CCOs have been able to create. And that will continue regardless.
I wonder if we could do that for K-12 education.
Yeah.
I'd like to follow up on that, though. I mean, you talked about the archaic rules of OHA, actually CMS, OHA, monitoring them. And you don't have a code for prescribing food. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with all those things that come that are alternative?
How?
Care, yeah.
And so this is the trick?
You don't have a code for it. You can't bill for it.
Yeah.
What do you do?
That's the trick. And I heard you. And I heard you asking about flexible services. I think that's therein lies the secret. How do you find money to spend money? That's what I call it. The process of finding money to spend money. You're not going to find savings in order to put it in the pocket of an insurance company. You're going to find money to put it into deploying a food trolley in the parking lot of a clinic.
We hope that's true.
Yes, that is true for my CCO. And so that's exactly what we're doing. And again, because we have the resources of Care Oregon behind us, which is a very innovative company, we're able to take some of the things that they've tried in the metro area and now start to move them out to Columbia Pacific. But that's, Chairman Greenlick, exactly right. That is the trick.
All right, I think we're going to...
Rep. Lively.
I just wanted to quickly follow up on the access from the standpoint, because you talked about having enough providers given that. So what's the short term, I guess, because we've talked a lot about rural providers and making sure they are. So what's the short term from your standpoint of being able to provide services? Are there enough? Is that going to get worse? And
yes.
So it's going to complicate the problem?
Yes. Thank you for the question. So the good news there is that even though a lot of these members were new to the CCO, they were known to the providers, right? They live in the community. They've been getting care, but they've been getting it episodically, not comprehensively. They already had established relationships. Now it's extending those relationships into the true meaning of primary care and addressing preventive health and not just acute episodic issues. But we don't have enough. And anything that you all can do to help figure out what it would look like to recruit and retain providers in rural Oregon would be very appreciated. We're going to work on it.
We have a good idea for that. Just talk to the Ways and Means folks.
Yes, we do.
We heard it this morning.
Good.
I'd like to thank you for coming. I'd like to say I just can't imagine what a Medicaid member would do to get care in those three counties without you around to help.
It's not me. It's a community. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
We ran a little over today. We're going to have to be a little more disciplined than we have four.
30 minutes.
Starting Wednesday, we'll have four presentations rather than two. And we can go till 3, and maybe we slip over a little. I think there's nobody coming in.
It's just rules. Meeting right after.
But not in this room.
Not in this room.
We have an extra 5 or 10 minutes.
They moved to that
Lively.
The rules is over here?
Yeah.
At 3?
I'm going to have to smack
it. Nathan's Lively, and
thank you very much for your presentation, team.
Thanks a lot.
We very much appreciate it. And
No, it's just data.
Mr. Chair?
We are not adjourned yet. Yes.
I just want to remind everyone that Representative Greenlick and my committees are having a committee get together tomorrow
Friday
evening.
Tomorrow.
I hope to see everyone there. Okay.
Yeah. Food will be good.
Yes,
absolutely.
Coffee
will be good. Should have a lot
the
of
drinks
fun.
Will be good.
Tomorrow night, 5:30.
And the weather will
tomorrow
be good.
Tomorrow night at 5:30.
And the weather will be hot.
We are adjourned.
It's tomorrow night at 5:30. It's tomorrow night at 5:30.
We are adjourned.